This past week we celebrated, I guess you could say, we observed Columbus Day. I want to preach on it. Columbus Day is a holiday about which many people are deeply ambivalent, I among them. And I want to make three points about this holiday. First, Christopher Columbus was a pretty typical European, just as the majority of us in this room are. Second, this has positive as well as negative aspects, the upside and the downside of Western culture's celebration of the ego. And three, it is an embracing the whole, that is both aspects of this legacy, that we find both the truth and, I think, insight regarding the human condition and how to move forward politically. It has now been 527 years and 6 days since Christopher Columbus's so-called discovery. It was really an invasion with accompanying genocide. We can be thankful for the writings of Bartolomé de las Casas. I quoted him here, this little quote about the masthead and the order of service. And that was a rather, he was a member of Columbus's expedition, and then later became a social reformer and a Dominican friar, but he meticulously recorded the whole disaster. He had a journal, extensive, and he wrote it all down. He wrote down all kinds of atrocities. Now, Christopher Columbus was a master mariner, fearless and indomitable on the sea. But these same qualities rendered him rigid and unsuccessful on dry land. He made landfall in the Bahamas this week in 1492. Several indigenous Arawak Indians, as he named them, met Columbus and his comrades on the beach. On subsequent voyages, Columbus discovered, again, Cuba and Hispaniola, that's the island of Dominican Republic and Haiti. Now, to his dying day, Christopher Columbus believed all of these places were in the East Indies, not the Caribbean. He was interested, really, in gold, and employed the harshest measures to get it. Within 2 years of his arrival, half of the 250,000 Indians on Hispaniola had died. When it became clear that there actually wasn't much gold to be had, Columbus instituted slavery, a second-best kind of ripoff, with centuries of disastrous results. By 1650, that's less than 60 years from his initial landfall, the Arawak tribe was completely gone. Every single Arawak was dead. In any case, it is no longer possible to simply celebrate Columbus's discovery as our ancestors did. In truth, however, it was not until the 20th century that we celebrated Columbus Day at all. Americans have, as a whole, as a people, have never really been very interested in history. As Henry Ford famously put it, history is bunk. Our countrymen and women, most of whom tend to agree with that, I'm afraid, have more often looked to the future than the past. It was in 1937 that Italian Americans organized to make October 12th a holiday. And there was an essay in last Sunday's New York Times Magazine about how the Italians became white, and there had been a lynching in the South of Italian immigrant, and all the Italians in the United States and in Italy now recently under the leadership of Benito Mussolini, and there was great groundswell of political support for Italian Americans and elevating their status, and indeed the way they did it was make a holiday. My point is that Christopher Columbus is a touchstone of floating and conflicting values. As the late Mexican writer Carlos Fuentes put it, Columbus Day is not an occasion to deplore or celebrate. It's an occasion to reflect. So in that spirit, let me propose some or share some reflections of my own. Most of us know something about Christopher Columbus. He was visionary, daring, persistent, brave, and an absolutely brilliant sailor. He epitomizes in his person European values, Western culture's best and worst aspects. The good, individual initiative and self-motivation. The discovery aspect, the new things, bold visions. The bad, more or less the other half of the same attribute, virtually no consciousness whatsoever of other people's rights. He planted the flag and claimed wherever he landed for Spain. Indians were condemned by pre-existing, that is Roman Catholic theology, that and they were condemned to simply be resources for exploitation or spiritual objects to be saved. That is to say, Indians' status as members of an independent country or community or nation were formally denied, even when easily and repeatedly demonstrated by force of arms. That is, even when you could see, well, this is a group, a nation, a people defending themselves and their territory, but the Europeans wouldn't accept, wouldn't even agree to that. They were non-human, non-suitable to be subjects, period. European conquest began and continued, unabated, with absolutely zero recognition of native rights whatsoever. But this isn't to put Indian culture on a pedestal. In fact, Native American societies warred upon, tortured, and enslaved each other almost as piteously as did the Europeans. Cortez conquered Mexico in no small part because other Indians helped him depose the overlording imperialistic Aztecs. What would have happened if the European conquest had not occurred? It's hard to say. The Incas and Aztecs would probably have abandoned human sacrifice and become literate. But would they have abandoned their collectivist cultures and their conviction that individuals have no legitimacy outside the theocratic state? Unlikely. In any case, Aztec and Inca traditions offer little hope for the status of women, equality before the law, religious tolerance, civil liberties, or other values that all of us hold dear and that derive almost exclusively from European culture. Indeed, we can be thankful, all of us, not to be alive in pre-Columbian Mexico or Peru. Pre-Columbian America was no paradise, but it was no heathen hellhole either, and it did not deserve to be stamped out. In their zeal to convert the natives, missionaries apparently forgot certain parts of the Bible. Like Matthew 12:16, about how the last will be first and the first will be last. Or five chapters later, Matthew 25, when it reminds the reader that come judgment day, it's not how many converts you've made, but how you've treated the least of these among you. The cry of the poor and dispossessed is not always just, but if you do not listen to it, you'll never know what justice is. Of all the legacies bequeathed by Columbus, the biggest and most lasting is the creation of a single world linked by a single international relations, a world dominated by Europeans and European ideas and maintained by force and firepower. Just as 500 conquistadors conquered Mexico, so today, a small fraction of the world's people, a high percentage of them white males living in London and Frankfurt and Santa Barbara, Medina, Westchester County, New York, and Georgetown. This small cadre of people, with force of arms and armies, control 99% of the globe. And ambitious adventurers curry their favor. Just as Columbus needed Isabella, Henry Kissinger needed Nelson Rockefeller, and then Richard Nixon to make it big. And just as Isabella needed her army and navy to establish Spain as the preeminent world power, Rockefeller, Kissinger, et al. Have needed America's military power to solidify their modern empires, and have needed compliant citizens to help them accomplish these goals. America, for the last 70 years, like Spain following Columbus, has been the reigning superpower on a now single earth. We are now increasingly challenged by the communist Chinese, preeminently, but others too. Moreover, it seems to me, we've enshrined in our country many of the contradictory and ambivalent values so poignantly exemplified by Columbus himself. Negatively, that means political arrogance, an over-reliance on military power, and an imperialistic lack of understanding and respect for other cultures. Until 3 years ago, that had been tempered by what we must recognize as essentially positive or good qualities: vision, courage, persistence, and hard work, daring, and a commitment to modernity. Make no mistake about it, for good or ill, we are all heirs to Christopher Columbus. In the wake of his so-called discovery, pre-Columbian America was obliterated. But all of us here, including Native Americans, have been transformed, and most of us at this point can be thankful. My family, or at least one strand of it, my father's mother's side, first came to what's today the United States in 1620. My ancestor, direct great great some odd grandfather, 12 back, William Brewster, wrote the Mayflower Compact. When I served a church in Santa Fe, however, I met people whose ancestors were here longer than that. In fact, in General Assembly in Spokane, I ran into one of them, Mary Ellen Gonzalez, and who I remember we had this conversation. I said, I think I go back 13 generations. He said, oh, I'm 50. And yes, she was. But that was nothing, because there were other members of our church there in Santa Fe, and especially in the Sweat Lodge community I was in, whose ancestors and family ties went back 13,000 years in Taos Pueblo. When trying to sort out America's current immigration mess, it is worth keeping in mind that almost all the people streaming to our borders from Central America are mestizos, that is, Indians, natives, whose ancestors were here long before most of us. Pilgrim forebears notwithstanding, most of my ancestors arrived on these shores far later, among the 35 million who came between 1830 and 1924. Some people arrived here in our country this morning. Some were carried by their parents. All were looking for a better chance in life, for greater opportunity, more freedom, looking one way or another for the promised land described in Deuteronomy and read earlier by Amy this morning. It is very clear to me, we are all immigrants here. A man of tremendous ego, Christopher Columbus exemplified much that is good and simultaneously a great deal that is dangerous and reckless and out of balance, and that typically comes along with excessive egoism. And so naturally do each of us exemplify many of these same characteristics. It is a complicated legacy, It is our lesson. Let us pray. O source of life and love, of hope, of community, of care, strengthen us in our resolve to recognize and seek to resolve wounds and injustices of the past while preserving that which is good. Help us to see that imperialism and racial hatred are still with us today, evils in our current life that weaken us and do injustice to all we hold beautiful and sacred. Enable us to eliminate these evils, both in each of our hearts and in the world around us. Preserve in us a clearer vision of wholeness, that we may faithfully support just, humane, and wholesome efforts in all walks of our busy lives, at home, in our workplaces, and in our communities. May we be appropriately prideful and competent in all our endeavors. May we find the strength and support to be full, responsible citizens and faithful stewards of our earth and of our country and our culture's best traditions, beginning now. So may it be. Shalom and namaste.